Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Carla and also your stories, perhaps your deathbed visions as well. What can you share with us? We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Carla Wills, Brandon with us. Carla, how many cases have you looked at with the work and research that you've done?
Probably several thousand.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's intense.
Yeah, quite a few. And the consistencies are unreal, as I said before.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever seen or were you part of a deathbed vision with a little child who was ready to pass over?
No, I haven't had that experience. I would think that would be really, really difficult, but at the same time, amazing.
Well, you may be right on both parts there. Very
yeah,
difficult.
I can't imagine having children. I can't imagine losing my own children. And working with clients who have lost children, the pain to have your children die before you, I can't even. My grandmother experienced that with my uncle and my mother. She lost both of her children before she and my grandfather passed, and they did not know how to grieve, and it really, and there were some interesting deathbed vision experiences that were happening with some of my mother's friends previous to her passing that I didn't learn about until I was much older, and but they never did grieve or have their feelings, and I really think it contributed to their physical health and definitely their emotional health.
Lots of callers here, but let me ask you again, how does the dying generally describe these deathbed visions? How does it happen to them?
The interesting thing is that the dying, when they're dying, they think that we see what they see. So they're kind of surprised when we don't see what it is they see. And it's usually what they will, there will be like surprise at seeing somebody who has passed on. Sometimes they will talk about seeing, as I said before, religious figures. Sometimes they will talk about seeing, as I said before, beloved pets. But when they talk about these deceased people, or they talk about somebody being in the room there to come take them away, they really do think that we can see too.
Yeah,
and so they will describe the person as if there really was a real person. With my mother-in-law, she was really seeing her mother who had died in Auschwitz, and she was seeing my father-in-law. And so in talking to the dying, the way they it's like they're talking to if you or I were sitting in the room.
All right, let's go to the phones. Oh, go ahead, finish up.
Just the only difference is that usually these are individuals who have passed on, and they haven't, you know, they're surprised to see them.
Why are they surprised?
Because I think my point being that we don't openly talk about this sort of thing anymore. And so a lot of folks don't expect this. And for some individuals, there's surprise, there's confusion, there's debate. There's debating that can go on with whoever it is that's visiting them. There's telling them, no, I'm not ready to go yet, or I don't know, or having a conversation with the living who are in the room with them, but then turning to the side and having conversations with whoever it is that's visiting that we as the living may not be seeing. So for them, it's a momentous experience. And for the living, if we will just listen, it can be an incredible experience for us too. It can pull us closer. So many people, they are afraid. How do I talk to the dying? What do I say to the dying? I don't want to upset the dying. Well, it's important to understand that the dying are thinking the same thing about us. I don't want to say anything that's going to upset them. What do I say? How do I say it? So if we could just understand that just because somebody is dying, we have our feelings, we have our emotions about the change in the relationship, but for heaven's sake, say what you need to say. Talk about what it is that's going on and talk about what it is you need to talk about.
Let's go to Jay now in Columbus, Ohio, east of the Rockies. We'll get us started here. Jay, go ahead.
Good morning, George and Carla.
Hi.
Hello. Carla, you've been very inspirational. And anyway, I understand about you talking about deathbed visits. And my question was, have you talked to anybody that's had near-death experiences? And also, have you got to talk to a gentleman I find very inspirational, and I cannot think of his name. He's been on George's show before, and he also works hospice. And he had a near-death experience because of getting hit by lightning. And George, if you can
let her know. Danion Brinkley.
Yes.
Danion Brinkley. Yes.
Yes.
He's a character.
Yes. I didn't know if you've got to talk to him before or not. I always thought he's been very inspirational and had a very good story to tell.
I talked to him once, and he probably wouldn't even remember me. And yes, I have talked to people who have had near-death experiences. The near-death experience is an experience that happens to a person who is on the brink of death, who is in the process of dying, but they come back. And a good resource for exploring those, IANS, the International Association of Near-Death Studies. You can Google that and find their website. What's interesting about all of these experiences is that it really does change how one views life, how one views their place in life, how one views life after death. When somebody has an experience like this, it's as if they need to take the time, and some people say it's 6 months, some people say it can take a year. They have to totally reevaluate what's important to them. Most experiencers discover that the material isn't as important as it once was, where it's necessary. Being of service now becomes more important. Investigating spirituality, there's more tolerance for differences in other people. There really is a real shift in how we view the world. There are discussions about a sense of connectedness with the universe. Yes, I think that these experiences are really important to investigate. And even for individuals who haven't had these experiences, go investigate them. Go to websites. Go check out IANS. I think Danion has his own website. Go to Raymond Moody's website, Jeffrey Long, some of these folks who have been into this stuff for a long, long time. But even just reviewing some of these different experiences that people have with the afterlife can change how a person perceives the world.
Well, there's a pattern here too, Carla, with all these experts who've studied this. I mean, and they all universally come back with the same thing as you have, that there's something going on. It may be not very explainable, but there's truly something marvelous happening.
Well, the thing that's interesting, anytime anybody has an experience like this, it's such an overwhelming encounter. I went to Raymond Moody's house years ago, and I was in I did some work with him, and there was a group of us, and I made contact with a whole bunch of my relatives. Those experiences, there's this sense of awe, there's this sense of feeling incredibly overwhelmed. There's delight, there's joy, there's connection. But then there's this sense of depression that can often come afterwards, a feeling of alienation of, okay, so now I've had this experience and I don't know how to connect. What used to be important is no longer important, and where do I go from here? And I've actually had people come to see me for therapy after having these experiences, because they don't know how to integrate them into their life. And it does. It's a process of, okay, let's take a look and see what did you lose in the process of having the experience? Well, I lost some of the myths I've been living with. Okay, so what are we going to replace these myths with? What realities have you learned? But the thing about these experiences is that everybody I've ever talked to, and myself included, there's a profound impact. These experiences are never forgotten, ever. And there's always this sense of no matter what someone says to me, no matter what they call me or what they want to debate me about, they're not going to change my mind about my reality and about what I experience.
All right, let's go to our Let's go to our Skype line. Mike is in Philadelphia. Hey, Mike, go ahead.
Hi, George and Carla. George, thank you so much. George, you have the greatest show on earth, and your guests are just, like, unbelievable.
Thank you, Mike.
Like, five-star.
Super.
Okay, and I hope my break up too much. I'm sorry. First off, I want to just attest to the deathbed visions. I heard about it ever since I was a child at funerals for, you know, like the passing relatives and things. And I've heard family members always speak that the person passing was speaking to someone. I experienced it with my grandmother and grandfather. My grandfather, before passing, he was with his brother who had gone on before him. My grandmother came from a litter of about 16. A couple died early, just after birth. I think she was like number five, number six of the... she would speak to her sister, who was younger than her, who must have been probably about four. So I can attest to that, again, from an old age. And grieving is is just a heavy thing. You know, when my brother lived in California, taking him to the airport and just saying goodbye welled up. And he was only going 3,000 miles away. So when someone is going into eternity, it's just really hard to say goodbye to them. You know, you can no longer touch them. They're out of the realm of just being close. Now, that's all I really had to say, and just thank you for this opportunity.
Okay, Mike. Thank you, too. I appreciate that. How do you equate the grief with the deathbed departing?
Well, it is. He was right on. I mean, the thing that's interesting about your last call-in is that as a young child, he was in a family where it was openly discussed. Here's a perfect example. It was openly discussed, but still there was the grief. And anytime we have a change in a relationship in the here and now, we lose a friend or somebody goes through a divorce, anytime even children grow up and leave us, we have to go through a cycle of grieving. That's very, very normal. So it would only make sense that, as I said before, here is someone who has grown up with his relatives and his aunties and his uncles and his talking about departing visions. But still, there was that grief, that intense, overwhelming grief. And that's because the relationship has changed. I think that what happens for people who have deathbed visions, if they can find someone to talk about it with, is that they can go through the process of grieving more effectively as opposed to getting stuck. Because a lot of us in this country, what we do is we get stuck. So we don't go through the sadness, and we don't go through the things I wish I had said, or we don't go through, well, they're not going to be here for, you know, she's not going to be here for my daughter's wedding, or whatever the feeling may be. All those things aren't expressed. It just gets tucked away. So I think that when there's acknowledgement of the deathbed vision, there is acknowledgement, for the most part, that grieving needs to happen in order for us to heal. Because I also believe that, you know, I think that those that love us on the other side, they might be having some grief too.
Maybe so. Let's go to let's go to our wild card, Nicole in Texas first. Go ahead, Nicole.
Yes, I'm glad. So glad you're on tonight. I was calling because I had a near-death experience years ago, and my question is, after that, I was able to see a lot of people, friends, relatives, things like that. I do a lot of genealogy work. So my question is, I had a friend of mine that passed away, and right after, not even a week, I was having her come to my bed, and she would literally wake me up, and I'd sit up, and I could just feel her, see her at the end of my bed, and I wanted to know. She wanted me to talk to her relatives. She wanted me to do some work for her to find these relatives. What do you suggest? I mean, should I go and tell these relatives, or should I just keep to myself and do the work for her.
Hello?
That's kind of dicey. I've been in that situation where I have had an after-death communication from somebody who has passed on, and they've wanted me to carry a message to somebody else, and typically it's a family member. And I don't just spring it on them because I need to respect where they're at. If they're not in a place to handle something like that, am I creating more harm than I am doing good? I've had people who have been, it's only happened to me a couple of times. And with one situation, the individual that I was carrying the message to, the wife just wanted to let her husband know that, and I don't call myself a medium or any, it was an after-death communication. And she just wanted me to let her husband know that she was okay. And he was a receptive kind of guy. And so when I shared that information with him, he was very happy to receive the information. But in the other situation, and I'm not going to really go into it, the individual who was going to be on the receiving end was definitely not somebody who would be receptive at all. And so the question I had to ask myself was, would I be creating harm? Now, maybe someday on down the line, something will change and I'll share the information. But I think that that's the question that we always need to ask ourselves. Am I going to be creating harm?
You know, Carla, when you were talking about when your mother died, how three of you all knew this, if you're at a hospital bedside situation and the deathbed person sees a vision, do the other people in the room see it too?
Not always, no. Oftentimes they don't, more often than not. But they do sometimes see them, yes, because I do have some of those accounts where there will, all of a sudden, everybody will see Auntie Mame. The dying person will see the aunt, and then the people at the bedside will see the aunt. But for the most part, typically what happens is that the dying will see somebody in the room, and then there will be confusion for family members. There will be confusion for healthcare workers. Now, interestingly, sometimes I've received some accounts from healthcare workers where they have seen somebody, and the dying haven't seen this individual. So I can't tell you why things happen the way they do. All I know is that they do happen. But the majority of my accounts do involve, if it is with a family member, typically it's a family member is in a different residence and they have a visitation, or they dream that they're being visited by someone who is passing. And that individual comes to say goodbye, or comes to say take care of yourself, or comes to say the will is in the drawer downstairs, or
yeah.
Or it is the person who is actually getting ready to pass.
All right. Well, you stay with us, Carla. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM with some final phone calls. It's a fast-paced night on Coast to Coast. And when we do come back, I'll tell you what's in store on our next Coast to Coast show as well. And you can always send me an email at george@coasttocoastam.com. We shall be right back. Don't touch your dial. On our next Coast to Coast program, a major show on crystal skulls. What are they? What kind of mystical powers do they all possess? Make sure you're part of that program. And then we're rolling into Friday, where we'll have those very special open lines. Back in a moment, final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. There's no doubt that the deathbed visions sure give you some kind of proof that there's something on the other side, Carla, huh?
Oh, I totally agree. As I said before, I think that they are, for me, when you can have an experience like that and you're not the person dying, but it is involved with somebody else dying, I just think it's incredibly powerful.
I do too. Let's go to Debbie, Great Falls, Montana, First time caller. Hi, Debbie. Thanks for holding.
Hi.
Hi. Good to have you with us.
How are you?
Good.
The reason why I'm calling is because I recently lost my mom on October 6th.
Oh, sorry.
And then a week before that, I lost my stepdad.
Oh, double whammy there.
Yeah, a week apart.
That's not easy.
And it's been really, you know, it's all we didn't know it was going to happen. You know, they weren't like sick. You know, we didn't know. And the grieving, I don't understand the grieving process. And also, I was not with my mom when she passed away, or my stepdad. But according to my sister, she said that my stepdad was talking about birds.
Birds?
Birds, and it being warm, and about I've never heard that.
What is that, Carla? What's that all about?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that these passings are so fresh. Mm-hmm. Right now, you're in survival mode. Don't worry about understanding the grief process. Right now, it's about getting one foot in front of the other. That's incredibly overwhelming. There will be moments when you will feel numb. I think that's really important to say, George, is that oftentimes when we're first confronted with an overwhelming loss, the only thing we can feel is numb. Numb is a feeling, and numb protects us because we're just not ready to feel it full force. Then it's kind of like a roller coaster where one minute we're kind of okay, and then the next minute we're a wreck, and then we're numb again. So with it being so recent, just understand it's one foot in front of the other right now. It's about getting up in the morning, trying to get something to eat, trying to get some sleep, not wanting to be real social, taking care of some of the things that need to be taken care of, just the basics, so don't worry about it. People do talk about butterflies, and they do talk about birds, and they talk about that in conjunction with premonitions of an upcoming death, so I have heard those things. Some of the other ones, I'll just throw them out there really quick. Sometimes there's the woman in white. That's I've heard that one on numerous occasions. Seeing certain other sorts of animal life that are specific to maybe that individual, that animal life that's special to them, foretelling. I remember talking to Art Bell about this years ago, and he said something about birds or some sort of animal. I can't exactly remember what it was, but it had to do with the passing that was in his family. So
was it owl?
I don't know. I can't remember, George. I wish I could, but I do remember specifically that it had to do with an animal, and it involved a passing of somebody in his family or somebody who was close to him. So, yeah, we can have those things. And if it feels like it is related to the person who is passing, if that resonates, well, listen to it. So,
Is there something in the brain, Carla, though, that sometimes will create these images before death? So we might not be dealing with some kind of afterlife, though I believe that. But well, there's also something in the brain that clicks in?
I do know that the body does begin the process of physiologically shutting down. There are things that do happen with death. And there's lots of really good information out there to discuss that. When I'm talking about deathbed visions, I'm talking about really consistent situations like seeing deceased relatives time and time and time again. And then at times having people at the bedside also see these deceased relatives. So, yes, I do believe, of course, that physiologically there are some real things that do go on as death draws near. And I think that oftentimes we become concerned when the dying stop eating, they stop taking in water, and so what we try to do is we try to force water and we try to force nutrition. Actually, it makes it more difficult for the dying to pass when we do that, because
It makes it easier as the body, as physiologically things are shutting down, to not be force-fed. And so defer to hospice always. But, yes, I do think there's some physiology that goes on.
All right, let's grab Sarah now from Kingston, Washington. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Carla. George, thank you for this show. This is really important. And, Carla, thank you for your work. We as a society really need to shift our understanding of death and the process of dying. My parents died about a year ago, 16 days apart. And I was not with my mom when she died. She died first, but I was with my dad. And I've been a student of metaphysics for a long time, and I had been taking care of my parents for about 9 months. And about the night before Dad died, I was aware. I've done some studies of Hawaiian traditions. And in their traditions, there are the night marchers, which are the old soldiers who are still marching after they die. And Dad fought in World War II. And I was aware of the night marchers, that they arrived. And at that point, Dad, who was always a sound sleeper, couldn't get to sleep, wanted a light on, didn't want to be left alone. And he had a trach, so he wasn't talking. He'd had throat cancer. And he started waving away something and saying, no, no. And this went on for about 24 hours. And finally, I got in touch with some people who do some powerful prayer work and asked for help. And within an hour, I got the hit, not the night marcher's family. And so I did what I could do to send the night marchers away and call in his family. And he switched from waving this away and saying no to pointing and smiling and waving. And I had been asking him if he wanted the hospice nurse to come and suction his trach, and he kept saying no. And finally he said yes. And the hospice nurse took along, well, she was on call and it was late at night, and she got there, and within 10 minutes he was gone. And we had all turned around to find supplies for her to suction his trach, and we turned back around and he was gone. And I said to the hospice nurse, I said, wow, he waited till we turned around. And she said, yeah, men do that. And I found out the next day that one of the people I had contacted for prayer work, she was in Hawaii. She was watching a TV show about the man who started hospice in Hawaii. And he had passed away about a month before this show. And in the show, he was talking about when his wife passed away. And at that point in the show, my friend put my dad in his hands. And it was 8:43 in Hawaii. And this is my dad and I were on the West Coast, and the caregiver put Dad's time of death at 11:43, which was 8:43 in Hawaii.
Yeah.
I didn't know that at the time. I found out the next day. And it felt very ordered. He asked for the hospice nurse to come in.
He knew.
He knew. Also, when he started waving at his family, I felt somebody come up and put their shoulders on my hands. I felt the family arrive. I didn't see anybody. I'm more clairsentient than clairvisual. We tend to view death as random, but this felt very orchestrated. and he knew what he was doing. He was there mentally to the last minute. He knew what was going on. And anyway, I just wanted to share that.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad you did. There's some incredible stories, Carla. You could write another book just from callers.
Well, the thing that's interesting is, see, here again we have a situation where there is an acceptance of this sort of thing, where death is not seen as something scary, where, the family has arrived, that's great. Prayer is used to help ease passing. Hospice is called in. An awareness that, yes, the dying will wait until we all turn around. Sometimes the dying will wait until we leave the room because they caretake till the last minute. So here is a situation where you have a family where there is this awareness and she has suffered this loss. You know, it's been a year and she's lost both a step-parent and a parent, and I'm sure there's grief there, but the thing that she made very, very clear is that it seemed orderly. Well, it was orderly because everybody was basically pretty much on the same page, and they were appreciating each other until the very end.
Until the end, yeah. Let's go to Ron in Springfield, Oregon. There he is. Go ahead, Ron.
Hey, George. Hey, Carla. Great to talk to you.
Hi.
Glad
you
as a former ER doctor, I've had several experiences, but I wanted to go over one that when I first started practice, I actually ran into a patient who died, went flatline. We, did all of our resuscitation things, and he indicated that there were people coming for him. Are you there?
Yes. You're a doctor, and you're sharing this, and I'm thrilled.
Well, actually, it's very interesting because I was actually working with the doctor who is now the governor of the state of Oregon, who is Jewish, and I went into the break room when we were finished with the family. And
speak up, if you would, Ron. Would you?
I commented, doesn't that bother you? And he said, well, no, not really. And he was a little older than I was. But I think what I wanted to comment was my greatest regret, I think, was for the wife and the family who, of course, are shut out of the ER room and they don't have any joint sharing experience with the family in that death experience. But what hit me as a very young man and a spiritual person myself is I actually saw what the man was telling me he saw coming for him. And it really, I guess I could say, distressed me.
It distressed you. Do you know why it distressed you?
How come? Do we know?
Environment. I wasn't really thinking of it in a spiritual thing. I was thinking more of the doctoring process rather than a hospice or a spiritual attendance. And it awakened in me things that I had put on the back burner, so to speak.
Well, and it probably changed the way you serve people too. It forced you to make some decisions about how am I going to do this differently. What usually happens is that we are trained in a certain way. I was trained in a certain way. You were trained in a certain way. Nobody told me about deathbed visions when I went through school. And so when confronted with this, I didn't know what to make of it. And so I'm sure I gave not really great advice. I didn't handle it really well. And then once I had the awareness of that, it forced me to reevaluate who I was. And in that process of reevaluation, I was forced to make some decisions about what I was going to do in the future. And that reevaluation process, sometimes that's, that involved me taking a real hard look at me. And it, as I said before, it involved me taking a look at maybe some of the things I'd been raised with, some of the things society had taught me. And it also forced me eventually to take a risk and be a helping professional and step up to the plate and say, hey, wait a second. This is how I feel about these sorts of situations. And y'all can sling arrows at me, but I'm going to go ahead and have an opinion about it.
Okay, well done. Good advice, too, by the way. Time for one or two more calls. We'll go to Carrie in San Diego. Go ahead, Carrie.
Hi, yes, I was calling because I've had a couple of experiences. My father-in-law, when he was dying, sat up in bed and looked at me, and he says, do you see them? And I said, who? And he goes, my wife, who had passed years ago. And I said, no. He goes, well, she's here. She wants me to go. And do you see my mother-in-law, and she's here. They want me to, they're coming here to take me. And then I had a friend who died in my home. She had been in a coma for 4 days. And right before she passed, she opened her eyes and called out to her mother and just kept calling her mom's name. And then she just passed. And this one friend of mine who died in my home, I've had contact with her through pictures. Every time I go visit her grave, I tell her, I'm going to come visit you. Will you give me a sign? And I was at a restaurant with my son and her sister and nieces that were there. And if I could send you the picture, I went and had a cup of coffee, a Turkish coffee. And when I lifted the saucer, there was a happy face drawn in coffee. And the people that were there could not believe what they saw, because it was bizarre, because the cup was not, it was clean. The saucer was clean. And when the gentleman poured the coffee, it spilled over on the edge. And then when I lifted the saucer, there was a happy face with a wink, hair and all. It was just bizarre. So that's my experience.
I love that. A happy face and some Turkish coffee. That's a first.
She described real classic departing visions. It's not uncommon for somebody who has been in a coma to, or who has been unconscious at the moment of death, to open their eyes, all of a sudden have clarity, say goodbye to loved ones, or report a deathbed vision. That's not that uncommon. But that's, or to raise their hands and say, I'm coming, or I'm ready, or there are my loved ones, or they're here to take me away with them, they're here for me, I'm ready to go. Yeah, those are, that's, she gave some really great examples.
They sure are. Carla, thank you so much. Carla Wills Brandon, her book, One Last Hug Before I Go and A Glimpse of Heaven. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasour, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.